Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, what the Supreme Court decision on public sector unions means. The Supreme Court has ruled against public sector unions. We'll talk about that. But first, Archbishop Bernard Hebda on where the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis will raise the money for a record settlement. Under the agreement with 450 victims of sexual abuse, the Archdiocese will pay more than $200 million as it reorganizes in bankruptcy. If you attend a Catholic church or a high school, you may be chipping in for that payout. And I'd like to hear from you this morning. Have you been asked, are you willing to contribute extra money for this share of the lawsuit settlement? What do you think the Archbishop should know about your view on how the church has handled the clergy abuse scandal? So I'd like to hear from you if you attend a Catholic high school, the parent of a child who does, you're part of a parish, a Catholic congregation, how you feel about contributing extra money for the lawsuit settlement, and what do you think overall that the Archbishop should hear and know about how you feel about how the church has handled this. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Archbishop, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Carrie.
I think those of us who have watched the scandal unfold over the decades will have a hard time reconciling how the church behaved in this. And again, I know that you've spoken out on this as well. The concealment, the denial, the lies. Can you assure listeners this morning that the church really understands how Catholics and others feel about this and that things have truly changed?
Thanks, Carrie. I certainly can attest to the fact that the church is continually learning more and more about this problem and finding new ways of addressing those issues. So we've been recognized for the work that's been done beginning far before I arrived here in terms of creating safe environments for children, whether it would be in terms of diocesan personnel, but also all of those volunteers who serve in the church. So there's really been an extraordinary effort that to make sure that we've created environments that are as safe as possible. And that has had a huge impact, I think, on those who had been victims and survivors of clergy sex abuse or abuse by other personnel in the church. So much their desire was to make sure that this wouldn't happen to another child. And as they see the extraordinary efforts that the Archdiocese has made in that area, that's been reassuring. The wonderful part of that is that even though there might not be so much trust in the Archdiocese, there are those external sources who are speaking about the work that has been done. So whether we're speaking about County Attorney John Choi or whether we're speaking about the court or the outside auditing firms that have been working with the Archdiocese, I think that most people in the church, certainly those who are in the victim-survivor community, can rest assured based on those statements from those outside the church that we've really done a credible job of improving the situation.
One of the things that you're talking about is making changes, as you said, to safe environments. I think one of the things that I was asking about is the deep embedded culture of the church. The church's reaction early on and through this entire scandal to conceal and lie and hide it. Can you assure Catholics and others that that deep culture has also changed, that the church would react differently today?
Yes, thank you, Carrie. So actually, those two things are related. So my first response was actually a response to that question, because in part, the way that we're able to create safe environments is by having those structures of accountability. So we have, for example, in the Archdiocese, an incredible review board consisting almost entirely of lay people, some who have suffered abuse themselves, others who are experts in that field. And so there's any time that there's any allegation that would come into the Archdiocese, not only do we involve law enforcement, but we would also involve that review board. And so the opportunities for anything other than transparency
or concealment
are minimal.
Okay.
And the Archbishop, and at the moment that's me, I really feel great support from that review board, knowing that I'm not acting on my own, but rather that I'm getting superb advice from those who have had that experience, who want the church to do better in those areas, and to make sure that we're going to be able to make those assurances to our lay faithful and to all who entrust their children to us.
Let's take a call here from Diane in Minneapolis. Hi, Diane. What are you thinking about? Morning.
Good morning. I feel very strongly about this, and I just will preface it by saying both of my children went to Catholic schools from preschool through high school graduation. And actually, they graduated from one of the schools that's now going to be asked to buy the facilities from the Archdiocese. And for a number of years, I have made a very conscious decision not to participate in the capital campaign. I choose to give my money to social justice local organizations. I don't trust the Archdiocese, and I don't think that is fair to keep asking parishioners to give and give and give to take care of situations that should have been handled years ago. And I feel very strongly about this.
Diane, I appreciate the call. Archbishop, what would you say to that?
I would say I certainly understand that this is a process of rebuilding trust. I can speak to the high-level involvement from lay faithful in the Archdiocese, not only in the area of child protection, but also our finance committee and our corporate board, who are making sure that the expenditures that we make are very much in line with the needs of this local church. And so we're never asking for money that's not going to be put to a positive use. One of the great things about this whole process, which took far too long, I can appreciate that, is that as we got to the end, most of the resources have already been gathered. And so even though we were able to present an agreement that would offer $210 million to those who have suffered abuse, the bulk of that came from our insurance companies, overwhelming amount, and we worked very hard to make sure that those policies that the faithful of the Archdiocese had provided for over all of these years were respected and that we were able to recover from them. Likewise, going into bankruptcy, we knew which assets that the diocese owned, basically everything, would need to go into this pot as well. And so those assets had already been marshaled. We're not really at a point where we're asking people to do much more than what they've already done. Some of our parishes who might have had claims against them, and a few others as well, have on their own been part of that. That hasn't been really at the direction of the Archdiocese. It's been parishes that desire to be part of this. Just as a fact, the Archdiocese owned the property under four of our high schools. And the unsecured creditors committee representing those victim survivors saw that as an important part of our bankruptcy estate that they had a right to. So we were grateful that those high schools, in recognizing the potential liability that might come from us having to sell the property under their schools, opted to raise the money on their own to buy that, so that this will never be an issue in the future. So it's not that they're making a contribution out of goodwill, but that they're receiving something for that.
Archbishop, so just for some clarity here, do you need additional money from parishioners, from churches, and from the sale of some of these properties?
Yes. So, you know, we've certainly already sold our properties, the mm-hmm. Archdiocesan properties. We did make a commitment, which we saw as significant and was significant in getting the deal done, for an additional $5 million to be paid over the next 5 years. So we're going to have to be looking for that. But in the greater scheme of things, that's not such a large portion.
But just so I understand this, I hear you saying most of this is coming from insurance, as has been reported. But we are going to need to turn back to our parishioners and some other sources for the cash to pay out our part of the commitment over the next 5 years.
For this $5 million, when you consider what the diocesan budget is or the total part of the settlement, it's relatively small. And a lot of that can come from the work that we've already done in trimming our own expenses. And so we had a reduction in force as part of this bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And going forward, we know that we think that we're doing the essential work of the church now, and that's crucial that we be able to maintain that. But I suspect that as we have people who are retiring in the next few years, that we might not be able to replace them, that we'll be making sure that our budget is tight and that we're able to garner a good part of that $5 million from our own operations. And certainly anything that we have comes from the faithful. So we're always very grateful for that. But it's not like we're going to be making an additional appeal, at least at this point. That's not part of the plan. Certainly, we've already been hearing from people that desire to be part of this, who recognize the responsibility of the church at large for this situation and who are voluntarily sending in some funds.
Okay, so you're hearing from people who say, I just want to help.
Yes, exactly.
And you're all right with that people are contributing to resolve the settlement and not specifically to the important work that the Catholic churches, the individual churches or the parishes are doing.
One of the things that we've come to recognize is that work is the work of healing is the essential work of the church as well. So for us to move forward and doing all of those good things that we do, part of that has to be reaching out to these 400 victim survivors, mm-hmm. and their families and many others who have been affected in some way by abuse. And so in our parishes, for example, we need to be doing more to be attentive to their needs. And I respect our pastors in being able to do that.
Call here from Kathy in Minneapolis. Hi, Kathy. Your question or comment for the Archbishop.
Hi there. I am a lifelong Catholic, and I consider myself part of the loyal opposition. I've been so hurt by all of this harmful behavior in the church. I still believe the church has so much good to give in other ways, though. You will not get one dime of my money. And if my parish is taxed with giving you money, I am redirecting my funds to their capital campaign. I will pay for their boiler. I will not pay one red cent for all of the harm this church has done.
And Kathy, why is that? Why still contribute individually, but why such a strong statement overall?
It is horrible. I mean, people, you are lucky that people are hanging on and still participating as Catholics. The damage is so dramatic that it seems reasonable that people would simply walk away from the church. And the fact that you are potentially wanting, you know, my donations to my individual parish to go to pay part of this penalty is outrageous.
Thanks, Kathy, for sharing that. You know, we often think about the church as being like a family. You can't walk away from your family and the responsibilities of those who are there. Part of our dealings with the parishes has been to assure them that there would be no increase in assessments for the next few years. And so it's not that we're going to be asking parishes or demanding from parishes that they up the ante to support us in this. And that's actually, I think, been your point of view is one that is shared by others. So our hope is to be able to continue to do the great work that the church needs to be doing, to have outreach to those who have been hurt. And as you speak to those who have been victims or survivors of abuse, they speak not just of the difficulties that they've experienced at the hands of priests or at administrators in the diocese, but they also feel a certain alienation from the people in the pew. So this is going to be a moment that's going to involve all of us in a new outreach certainly that in the area of child protection, but even more importantly in that area of bringing healing to the church. And as I hear the pain in your voice, I realize that that pain is not just from those who physically have suffered abuse, but from those who have been let down by the church. And so we hope that we're going to be able to restore that confidence, that trust that that you would have.
Archbishop, just to, again, to clarify this, because there's been some reporting on this, insurers are paying about $170 million.
Yes.
That leaves you with about $40 million to come. And you've talked about personnel attrition that you're not going to be replacing. You've also talked about people who have stepped up to write checks. Doesn't that also require, though, that you are going to need some additional funds from the parishes? I hear you saying you're not making a special appeal, but aren't you going to need some additional resources from the parishes on this?
Not for this specific purpose. So, of course, the diocese needs the resources from the parish just to go about its normal work to maintain the work of the archdiocese. That's not related to these payments. So as you look at that gap between the $170 million that's provided by the insurers and to the $210, everything is accounted for, but $5 million that we've committed to as a sign. And as we spoke to victims and survivors, they said, we want to make sure this doesn't happen again. There has to be some pain. And would that $5 million represents that in some ways, that those funds that we don't already have.
And but you feel like you can find this in efficiencies and other pockets of resources,
Exactly. So when you consider, for example, what are the budgets of a school? What are the budgets of a parish? $5 million over 5 years, it's going to be significant for us, but it's not that significant. And so I think it's something that's doable. We have great confidence that we will be able to make those payments and looking for ways of being able to do that.
Call here from Joe in Minneapolis. Hi, Joe. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, good morning. So, Archbishop, I'm a claimant, and I submitted my for defection, and I hope that the Archdiocese processes that as quickly as possible. My question for you is this. When you were sent to the Archdiocese to fix things, and I don't envy your job because you were handed this, but there was a very concerted effort on behalf of the Archdiocese to distance itself from churches and parishes corporately to make the distinction so you would be protecting these institutions from the result of any settlement. So how do you rationalize now putting the hook on Benilde St. Margaret, Totino Grace, and De La Salle for coming up with this money? This feels to me like kind of a bait and switch. And I have two kids who attend Catholic schools. I just removed one of them. She's now attending private school or public school. But how do you justify that? My son is going to De La Salle, and right now they're going to be on the hook for paying for the past sins of your organization.
Joe, if I may, we have a number of other people that would like to speak with the Archbishop. Do you have a question in here?
That is it. How do you rationalize that?
All right.
Great.
Let's let him answer.
Thank you for that. So two things. One is there was no pressure that was exerted on those schools. It was an opportunity that they were given to purchase the land at this time. I can tell you that one of the claimants, you would know that the plan that the Unsecured Creditors Committee submitted to the court saw a much greater value coming from those properties. So you were asking for more money based on the property that we owned under those schools. And so the schools actually, I think, are receiving something in return. It's not just a goodwill donation. It's the fact that they now own the property underneath their schools.
But it is an opportunity, quote-unquote opportunity, that they normally wouldn't have had to come up with had the Archdiocese not been in this situation. Just to be clear on that.
Absolutely. But they also were receiving that property, I think, at a value that was very reasonable for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they took advantage in a good way of the situation, in a way that would also enable us to help victim survivors like Joe to receive compensation for the harms that they had faced. So, Joe, we're very grateful to you for your patience, and I certainly understand your concern. You had mentioned about you hoping that the Archdiocese would process quickly. You know, in the whole process, it'll be the trustee in bankruptcy that will be responsible once the plan is actually approved. Who will be responsible for making sure that the funds are divided correctly and are processed correctly. So it'll really be somebody else other than the Archdiocese that will be taking care of that for you.
Mary says on Twitter here, Archbishop, I was a cradle Catholic and the product of a Catholic education, as are my children, culturally and happily immersed for most of my life, no more. Church hierarchy is rotten to the core. Add archaic policies, Ray, women and LGBT. It's painful to leave, but necessary. And this is something I wanted to ask you about, something you've said. You were speaking, I think, to the victims and to the church faithful at large, that the abuse stole your childhood, your innocence, your safety, your ability to trust, and in many cases, your faith. Do you have to in some ways say, I've lost Mary, there's really nothing I can do about that? Or do you hold some kind of hope that you can win people back with a demonstration that the church truly has changed?
Right. So it's not really a question of winning. We begin from a proposition that what we're doing is continuing the work of Christ and that he's calling people to be part of the church and that's his work is working in the hearts of people. So we want to create a situation in which people are going to trust us enough to come back and to experience that. You know, one of the images that we use for Christ and then also for the bishop is that of being a shepherd. And so we're never happy when we lose any sheep. We never write anybody off. And so there's always going to be those attempts to bring people back. You know, we're looking as a church in moving forward in having something that's called an archdiocesan synod, where we establish priorities for the church. I would suspect that one of those priorities, based on listening sessions that we've already held, will be in terms of evangelization, not just those who have never been Catholic, but most especially those who have drifted away from the church. And so for us, that has to be a priority.
I want to ask you about what you said there, though, which was we want to bring people back. We don't think of it as winning. Someone like Mary can maintain a deep faith and a belief in Christ and an allegiance to the tenets of the Catholic Church without being involved at all with the infrastructure of the hierarchy of the church. That's what I'm asking is, do you say in some ways she may never show up at her local church again? She may never give to the collection plate. And that's just one of the things that we have to reconcile as part of what happened here.
It's, I think, for anybody who is Catholic to the core, as she described herself.
From the cradle, she
said. There's a love for the sacraments in the church. And so that often brings people back, especially at moments of challenge in their own lives. And so there is a natural draw, I think, between Catholics, even when they've drifted. And we hear that often as people come back to the church for a funeral of a loved one, and they once again feel that the Lord's tugging at their heart. Obviously, we want to make sure that we're creating a situation where they're going to be welcomed, where they're going to experience a renewed trust. But that's really God's work as much as it is ours.
I asked you for 30 minutes. It's been 30 minutes. How do you feel about continuing to take some questions?
I'd be happy to.
You all right with that?
Sure.
Thank you. To the phones to Anne in Minneapolis. Hi, Anne. Thanks so much for waiting.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'll preface my comment my question by stating that I am a lifelong Catholic, attended Catholic schools, kindergarten through medical school. And at this point, I'm just ashamed and disgusted by the church's response to the crimes committed. My question is around, you know, prior to asking people like me who haven't committed any crimes to contribute to these costs, I'm wondering what sort of reparations financially are being asked of the perpetrators. Are they working extra jobs, making extra money to contribute to this fund? What are they doing?
Yes, that's a great question. And for a good number of these perpetrators have already died. So we're dealing with many of these crimes would have been things that occurred many years ago. We had claims over 70 years old. Most of those priests have gone. And those who continue find themselves really in difficult situations in terms of finding employment, as that's one of that would be a broader discussion in the society, I think, about how it is that we deal with people who have committed heinous crimes against children. And so they don't find themselves to be in much of a position to be of assistance in this. And so that's not a great source of income. And many times there have been suits against the perpetrators as well. Often it's the church was the institution that would be able to provide some compensation because the perpetrators had little resources, if any. So it is something that falls to the church at large. And I can appreciate the disgust that you spoke about. I certainly hope that if you would take the time to hear what the church is doing and how the church is responding to these needs of not only of children, but of those who have been harmed in the past, that there might be some pride as well, in the sense that we're making, I think, great strides in repairing the harms that were done, and in trying to help throughout our society to establish norms of how we might create environments where these things don't happen.
Archbishop Bernard Hebda has been kind enough and willing to sit into the studio here past the time that we invited him to take some calls and questions from you about the settlement on the church and some of the larger questions about how the church moves ahead from here, how the faithful of the church and the disillusioned of the church are feeling about the way the church has behaved. He seems willing to continue to take some questions here. So 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. We're also keeping an eye on this U.S. Supreme Court decision on unions, and we will talk about that at 11 o'clock today. And early next week, we will open the phone lines for your calls on Catholics as well, on the Catholic faith and the church's decisions here. But this is an opportunity now to speak directly to the Archbishop. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. Archbishop, we had a call from Jane in Minneapolis who asks, are retired abusers still being supported by the church, or could that money be used for victims? Is that the case, that they can live out in retirement basically on church resources?
The law of the church requires us to provide basic sustenance even when somebody has been has left the church, even a minister, even if he's been dismissed, that we want to make sure that there's at least the essentials are covered. So the church does do that.
Do you feel ambivalent about that yourself? I understand the law of the church, but
yes.
Personally, how do you feel about that?
No, I think to be able to, the church has a great respect for the dignity of each human person. That's what motivates our desire to be responsive to the victim survivors. But we also have to be mindful of that way with those who have committed heinous crimes in the past, whether we're talking about priests in this area or in other areas of society, that there has to be still a respect for that person. And so often our priests aren't capable of any other type of work. And so those who are able have found other employment and are no longer in need, but those especially who are up in years, we've been sustaining at that minimal level.
Call here from Terry in Edina. Hi, Terry. Thank you for waiting for the Archbishop.
Hi, thanks for taking the call, and thank you, Archbishop, for doing this. I admire you for at least trying to explain some of this. My question is about the attorney's fees. The bulk of this $210 million is in reality going to attorneys, not only the plaintiff's attorneys, but also the Archdiocese has had to hire a whole plethora of private attorneys to fight this thing. What percentage is really going to the real winners, the lawyers?
That's a difficult question. The claimants have different agreements with their attorneys as to what percentage they're going to be paying. And the Archdiocese has nothing to do with that. So we don't really have even the knowledge that we would be able to share on that. Often the percentage is around 33%, about a third. I think that their lawyers will be well provided for. At the same time, in addition to those attorneys that have agreements with the claimants, there are also those who have been involved in the bankruptcy process, so have been representing not only the archdiocese, but also the claimants and the parishes in this whole process. And as bankruptcy is set up, it's the petitioner in bankruptcy, in this case, the archdiocese, that's response. All of those funds are going to come from the pot that was put together. One of the things that helps me to sleep at night over that when I think about those fees is that those lawyers have worked very hard to be able to increase the pot. So when we first were able to, the first plan that we submitted, it was in the range of 50-some million dollars. And then as we invested time in working with the insurance companies, we were able to increase that to 156 million. So, and then it went from 156 to 210. So certainly the lawyers' fees were significant, but much of that was working with the insurance companies and making sure that the contribution from the insurance companies was going to be significant. So the lawyers' fees that were paid, especially in the last year and a half or so, that it's been primarily in the area of working with the insurance companies, have borne very good fruits that I think that most people would say that it was a good investment, even though it seems painful when we recognize how much it costs to have good legal representation.
Archbishop, a couple more questions.
Sure.
How do you feel about that?
Sure.
Thank you. Kellen says on Twitter, the church continues to exorcise her demons and ask for healing and forgiveness. May we, above all, center ourselves on Christ, especially in the Eucharist, the reason for our faith. A call here from Monica in Oakdale. Good morning, Monica. Your question for the Archbishop.
Good morning. Archbishop, I'm wondering what has changed or will be changing in the whole selection of seminarians, the training of seminarians, the assessment that they're in the right place as they're ordained, and continuing to monitor folks as they go out and serve the community.
Great. Thank you for that question. To be honest with you, much has changed in the last 30 years on that question. So every seminarian that comes into our system has to undergo a whole battery of psychological exams. We have in our seminary now a full-time psychologist who's there to be helping the men to assess how it is that they're going to be able to live out priestly lives. So I think that's been very helpful. As part of the settlement agreement that the Archdiocese entered into with Ramsey County, so dealing with the criminal charges that had been filed against us, there's a commitment on the part of the Archdiocese to do more in the seminary. So Judge Tim O'Malley, who heads the Office for Ministerial Standards in our Archdiocese, for example, has been meeting with the seminary. There's an increased review of files. There have been presentations that are made to the seminarians. We had the opportunity to bring in a survivor of clergy sexual abuse to speak to the seminarians about what that experience meant in his life. And we're really just starting in that area as well. But I think that already in the last 30 years, there's a heightened awareness of the importance of making sure that the candidates that we have for priesthood are psychologically healthy and that they're going to be able to really withstand the pressures that they will be under as priests.
Archbishop, one last question, and I think it might be valuable for listeners to hear how you've reconciled the acts, the vile acts of some of these priests who were representing the church with your own, of course, ongoing and deep commitment to the idea and ideals and tenets of the church. Just how you've taken this in as this has unfolded and how you answer some of the questions that I'm sure come up for you.
Yes, thank you for the question and this opportunity. One of the things in the ministry of a priest is that we often deal with sin. And so whether it be in the confessional, whether it be in counseling, whether it be in working with families, we recognize that there are people who don't meet the ideals, those people who sin, but there's always that possibility of redemption. And so it doesn't shock me that our priests, who are human, would also be sinners, would be weak. But we need to do, certainly as the last caller had mentioned, we need to do more to make sure that we're screening our candidates. But the fact that we would have people in the church, and it's not just even the cases against the archdiocese aren't just against priests, but also against lay people and against religious, that we recognize that there's always going to be the possibility of sin. And our job is to be able to be reconcilers and to help people to live virtuous lives.
Did you feel despairing at times through this in your own heart?
I've been really blessed in the time that I've been here because even though the callers were rather critical, there are wonderful Catholic lay people in this archdiocese who have been so supportive of our efforts, who are equally mindful of what happened in the past. And at the same time, we're seeing that we need to be committed to doing better in the future. And so I haven't really felt alone. The priests have been very supportive. The lay people who have collaborated with the archdiocese have been magnificent in helping us to really do all that we can to change the culture, to change the climate, and to begin to make reparation for things that have happened in the past. So I felt really supported in all of this, Carrie. Thanks.
Archbishop, I'm really grateful that you stayed past the time and that you agreed to do that and you were willing to take questions from the audience. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.